Hello and welcome back to Mess Explores with Xavier and Alan, where as always we'll be looking at all manner of films from around the world. This week we're rising up out of the gutter in Parasite, so let's start climbing. Hello Alan.
Hello Xavier, of course. Hello to our favourite fans. Welcome back to Mess Explores. Before we begin to unravel the complexities of Korea's social class and spend the rest of our lives in the secret basement, remember, as always, our podcasts are best enjoyed if you've seen the film prior, as we do contain spoilers. As Xavier said, we are looking at Parasite, which is a 2019 Korean film written and directed by Bong Joon-ho. Parasite stars Song Kang-ho, Lee Sun-kyung, and Cho Yo-jeong, just to name a few. Parasite also won the Best Picture at the 92nd Oscars in 2020. So without further ado, Save, let's get into the film. What did you think?
Look, I actually thoroughly enjoyed this film. And while I don't necessarily believe it was quite as worthy of as much praise as it received, It was most definitely a brilliantly well-executed film. You know, the narrative was enthralling with so many elements of hidden meanings and agendas. The characters were rich. The technical elements of cinematography and sound were on point. And the execution by the actors was absolutely excellent. So on the whole, I think this was an exceptionally well put together film. And of the films we've reviewed from Bong Joon-ho, it was my favourite to date by a considerable margin. How about you?
Our first film on this podcast was another film directed by Bong Joon-ho, which was Snowpiercer. And for those of you who haven't seen that episode, please do go check it out. Like, we really enjoyed it. And so instantly, when I found out this was the same director for this movie, I knew that we were in for a treat. And it did not disappoint, guys. For me, this film was genuinely surprising, and it was actually better than Snowpiercer. And I actually really enjoyed that film. But at the same time, I felt like this was superbly capricious in ways that it made the viewer feel it could be revolutionary. I would consider this film to be an audacious assessment of the fundamental inequity that's intertwined in today's society. And there's so many twists and turns, and it goes from comedy to thriller over two acts and engages the audience along the way. And just when you think that Bong is heading with the narrative, he sort of takes a 180 degree turn and we end up in a bloodbath. Now, Bong pushes the boundaries in this film by the constant manipulation of the narrative, and there's moments you feel like it could all fall apart like a house of cards, but his ability to hold all the acts together, I guess, results in an Oscar-winning film.
Yeah, the narrative definitely kept the audience engaged and on tenterhooks throughout, as you never really quite knew where this film was heading. And had it gone on for another hour, I wouldn't have been surprised if it had turned into some weird sort of depraved, dimly lit psychological thriller in the basement, akin to films such as The Platform.
Yeah, so as a great contemporary filmmaker, I think one thing that resonates with Bong Joon-ho is his ability to be a visual master. In Parasite, he sort of establishes the Kims living in this semi-basement structure. And Bong stated that, you know, even though it's a common archetype for poor Korean residents, his analogy sort of alluded to the fact that semi-basement sort of means that a portion of the building is still above the ground, symbolizing a little bit of hope that remains. And I think that itself, you know, just speaks volumes of what he has to deliver on screen.
I think further to that also is the fact that they had to actively fight not even to be urinated on by the local drunkards. And this element, I think, like the symbology of the split level, served not only to highlight their place in the world, but also the fact that they were motivated to climb out of the gutter themselves and live upon high. And this idea was odd to some degree, though, as the family felt like a paradox, whereupon they came across as both supremely intelligent and cunning, yet also stupid at the same time. And while to some extent this frustrated me as a viewer, I think this was also the intention, as was reiterated to us by the semi-frequent mentions that the poor had this foul stench to them, and they would never be anything more than what they were. You know, it was almost like it was their birthright to always be ultimately the stupid fools on the street, no matter how hard they tried to change, for it was in their nature. And further to this, you know, the father, when he speaks to his son about not having a plan and why having no plan is always best, it in essence summarizes why so many may be peasants and never manage to elevate themselves, because they have no ambition or drive at the core of their being that is based on anything more than material gain and the perception of success.
This is a very interesting take, Save, and I think when you say that the father has no plan or he's with no plan, he basically says in the film that the kind of plan that doesn't fail is having no plan at all. And he justifies his position after the apartment actually floods and everyone in the area has to sleep on the same level. And this is such a bleak statement to make, and I think that it goes beyond the nature of having no ambition. I think it speaks the realism of how current disproportionate societal structures have indoctrinated those at the bottom to feel helpless and undignified, and it's based on a system that, you know, has persecuted them time after time, and that where ambition is replaced with bare necessities. Even in the first act, we see pizza workers look down on the Kim's family, and even in that scene, we see two lower socioeconomic hierarchies disagreeing with their place in such a hierarchy, and we'll discuss this a bit later on. But Mr. Kim, in my opinion, has not been given the opportunity to break free from his social shackles and has found acceptance and solace in his current existence. You know, the other thing to point out here is that Mr. Kim has been made fun about his stench after the flooding and consistently throughout the movie. So I feel like this could also have like contributed to, you know, his emotions here.
Perhaps so, but by the same token, I mean, you could argue that it's been his attitude that has held him back as well.
Mm.
As even when folding the pizza boxes, we see that they are careless and don't even do something that simple well. And let's face it, if you can't even fold a pizza box properly, you're probably an oxygen thief and society's better off without you. But I think that's sort of what this film was getting at. It's like, where do you fit in the structure? And this is people that wanted to elevate themselves into the higher echelons, but they couldn't even elevate themselves in, I guess, the social class at which they stood to begin with. So it's a big sort of social dynamic shift for these people, I guess.
Is the film saying where they fit in the structure, or is the film actually having a go at the structure in the first place? You know what I mean? Like, it's almost saying that, like, how are these people meant to move up the social ladder when they've got no skills or opportunities?
Look, I think it's a little bit of both. But I think, for me at least, if I wanted to look at the characters critically in this film, Kim family or clan is essentially the title's sake of this film. They are the parasites of society. And a parasite isn't a good thing, no matter how you cut it.
Mm.
So I think at the end of the day, it's saying that these people serve no good purpose in the world. They are a drain at every level. They can't do the lower socioeconomic class as well. They certainly can't do the higher class as well without ultimately killing their host, if you want to call them that. So I think that's probably more to the point that some people really are, as I said, these sort of oxygen thieves that the world is better off without because they are parasites.
Just hold on to that thought, Tate, because I want to get back to that title a bit later. But since you've kicked it off, let's talk about themes in this movie. And I'll start off where I want to talk about The Rock, the initial gift that Kiwu's friend actually gives him from his grandfather. And it's such a random object to give. You know, it's usually an old collector's item and not commonly collected by the Korean youth. So for them to be presented this gift is sort of unique and also absurd at the same time. Even when it's just a stone, it's actually very expensive because we see the box that it comes in. It's carefully packaged, you know, it's very elaborate, and it's obviously a luxury item. But even the friend who gave it to them, you know, he comes from a higher social class than a Kiwu himself. And as the camera pans through the other family members, we see their look of astonishment in their faces. You know, we see the rock structure make its appearance again, where Gensei uses it to strike Kiwu in the head. And I guess this is a very ironic comedy that the rock that's meant to provide them good fortune is actually used as a weapon against the family. And the symbology of the rock actually doesn't just end there, because when it's returned to the riverbed in the final act, it can be seen as the way that I saw it is that the social class balance returning to the disjointed equilibrium that once was, and the Kims have been defeated again by the system.
So I saw this a little bit differently. And I don't disagree with your points at all, because I can definitely sort of see that in the film as well. But for me, when The Rock was given to Kiwu, I didn't feel that his family looked at it with astonishment. I felt that his mother in particular looked at it with disdain. She would have rather money than a rock. And I think she actually makes a comment about, I would have rathered food.
Yes.
And I think this sort of speaks to this uncivilized nature of these people, that whether you look at it as a glorified pet rock or not, she doesn't accept it for the goodwill that it is.
Yeah.
She takes it at face value as it's just a lump of rock, and I don't care why you gave it to me or what it's meant to represent. She was purely materialistic about it. And then I think for me, when, you know, the rock was then used as a weapon, you could argue to some extent it may not have brought good fortune to the Kim clan necessarily, or maybe it did temporarily, but that rock also then was the liberator of Jansei out of the basement. It allowed him to get his freedom as well. So I think the rock had different value in terms of the fortune it would bring for different people. It never promised to bring good fortune forever. But I think what it actually did do on the whole when it sort of ended up back in the river was that it brought good fortune to society.
Mm.
The rock had basically been used to enable this parasite, or these parasites as the Kim Kam family, to be killed off to some extent.
Right.
And that, I think that's where the balance was brought, is that the parasite was brought back in check so that there was this equilibrium in society. And I sort of felt like it was sort of a greater social message than just necessarily one thing about any particular family.
Oh, wow. It's interesting. I think that's a really good point that you brought about the mother sort of saying, I would have rather something more tangible than metaphorical. I'm pretty sure Kibu in the scene actually says, oh, wow, this is metaphorical. I guess it's a way for him to buy into the hype. You know what I mean?
Mm. But I guess the other thing too, though, is that, you know, given at no point the Kims have ever been decent people throughout the entire film, the entire premise of their existence was to cut corners, manipulate and betray those around them for their own selfish gain. So I'm not even just so sure it was necessarily about just keeping the social system in check, as so much as perhaps a moral one as well.
Mm.
Now, that's not to say everyone else is good in the film other than the Kim family, but they're certainly not as evil as the Kim family. And so that sort of brings me on to my next point, where we see the scene of the family fleeing the house, and it's like them descending the steps into hell, but it's sort of the hell from whence they came. It's like they're these demons that have come from somewhere else and they're being cast back down. And I think that was a very poignant sort of message there, one about the return of evil, but also, as you say, a social class disparity message. Did you have some viewpoints on that?
Yeah, so the turning point of the film actually occurs during this torrential downpour. But I feel like it's already like foreshadowed in the first act, where we see the water fight outside the Kim's house. Now, Bong Joon-ho showcases the imagery of the rain not only to showcase the class divides, but also as social commentary on climate change. And I think this is a topic that he's actually addressed in his other movies like Okja and Snowpiercer. Now, the storm is a minor setback to the Parks and only actually results in them cancelling a holiday or a night out or weekend away. But for the Kims, it's actually the destruction of all their belongings. You know, it's the increased disease risks that they face and the obliteration of all their food rations. And even when we take a look at the metaphor from the from a structural area, the affluent live on high ground and the poor live at the bottom, and the flow of waste and water only has one trajectory, which is down. According to Insider, Bong uses the depiction of mirroring families and the Park's obsession to fulfill their son's desire for native Indian culture as a way to critique capitalism's way of reducing complex cultures into, I guess, surface-level commodities.
There's a couple of things I'd actually like to touch there, because I did also look at this torrential rain almost as though it was a cleansing storm.
Oh,
wow. It was designed to actually flush them out.
Okay,
and did
right.
Exactly that. So I think, you know, it does work on a lot of different levels. Yes, there's a very human level about, you know, the increased risks of disease and the loss of your possessions and food and whatnot.
Yeah.
But I think, again, it comes back to seeing if they are the parasites, this is the thing that washed them out of the place at which they had essentially defiled. But also further to your comment there about the son's desire for that sort of native Indian culture, native North American culture, I think it was interesting too, because the wife frequently makes comments about how US products are superior and how the education is held in such high regard and so on and so forth. Whereas when you are in the likes of America, often people from the outside will look at education standards in countries such as Korea and go, they're actually vastly higher. And a huge amount of the products that we have in our homes actually come from Korea, not the other way around. So it was an interesting sort of parallel to draw between cultural perception and cultural reality from sort of two sides of the same coin. So yeah, I think it was an interesting way, as you say, to look at capitalism and the way it sort of reduces complex cultures, because at the end of the day, we've all had a great impact on each other. And we need to remember too that this film is from South Korea and America spent an awfully long time there at war. And so South Korean people actually feel like they have a great debt of gratitude to some extent for the Americans from that time. And I think a lot of that may be a bit of carryover that we're sort of seeing in this film.
I like how you've actually taken another perspective on the rain as basically equating to the Kims as rats and the water flushing them out. But just going back to what we're talking about before in terms of the descending from the stairs, I like how the directors use levels and space to sort of bring out a further emotive sort of like traits in the film. I want to point out that the director sort of uses levels and space to bring out these emotive themes. And according to the production designer on the film, the spaces in this film were even more compartmentalized and all connected through a very complicated set of stairs, even within the house, the external set of the house to the Kim's dwelling. And I guess it's very like quite evident Even when we look at the space used, the parks have this surplus of space and excess of access to the sky. The sun seems so much more refined in this weird way through, you know, who's like privileged. And then as for the Kims, they still have access to the sun and light, but it's through shadows and like gloominess and, you know, like this whole bleak outlook. I just want to get your perspective on that, Tay.
I completely agree with you. I mean, there was an levity to the world of the parks where there was this almost a cleanliness to them. Even when surrounded by the lower classes and the bleakness of urban development, they essentially had a sanctuary within their own premises. So It was about more than just sun. It was the fact that there was also nature present in their lives rather than simply god-awful concrete everywhere and looking outside of the world at street level, essentially through a window in the gutter. So, yeah, I completely agree that the film's not just about social classes in terms of financial prosperity or material wealth. It's also about, I guess to some extent, that connection to the world around them, because you actually can afford to be free, if that makes sense.
Mm. And just touching on what you just said about living sanctuary and their premise, I guess something that I noticed is the use of the rectangular windows in both houses, but we get very different views. When Bong was questioned about this in an interview, he sort of stated that the rich house carries a very artificial sense of beauty and artificial sense of cleanliness. It's very orderly, you know, like the backyard and the entire house, it's pristine. And the giant glass window basically is built in this cinemascope ratio, and it's designed like that on purpose. So it's intended to feel like when you're sitting and drinking in front of the couch, it feels like you're watching a film on screen. As for the poor house, the window is longer and it looks like a sense that the family has no privacy. You know, anyone from the outside can look in and they can infiltrate their privacy and space. There's always this sense of being vulnerable to the outside world.
There was most definitely a sterility to the park house. It was sort of lived in, but always felt unlived in, even to the extent where some of the toys, you know, there was one or two things out of place and it was immediately whisked away. Whereas in the Kim family house, it was chaos. It was a rat's nest. It was busy. The toilet was up against the ceiling. You couldn't actually sit on it without being hunched over. It was very crowded. And I think another important thing there too was, you know, it's probably an element of where the stench came from too. You know, these people didn't even necessarily have fresh air that would move through their home. They didn't have a window that opened up onto nature. So yes, there was most definitely a lot of elements tied into here with what we saw in terms of the living spaces.
I'd also like to mention something else that I've like really noticed, and I want to see if you picked it up as well, is the division amongst the working classes. There's this sense of disunity amongst the working class, and it's identified like throughout the film where, and we talked about this earlier, with initially the Kim family like folding those pizza boxes and, you know, being sort of like treated like second class citizens within the pizza shop itself, and then for them to come back later to have enough money, but only for the pizza owner to chuck the pizza on the table as if she's not happy with their rise in social class. You know, like, I don't think she was content for the fact that these are the family that was helping her, and now that they're supporting her in a way. And then we see the disunity between the Kim's family and the previous housekeeper, and how they don't want each other to sort of progress.
Yeah, it was interesting to look at that sort of dynamic because, as you said, you know, there is sort of a social hierarchy across all classes. And it may not even be that, you know, the lower socioeconomic classes have a hierarchy of their own. It's just there's a lot of micro steps between the bottom and the top of social hierarchy on the whole. And the Kim family has essentially been somewhere towards the bottom. And yes, I guess the housekeeper and her husband, they were a higher class, essentially, simply for the fact of their location and the situation that at least the wife found herself in. The husband, on the other hand, quite the opposite. He essentially lived a life in prison, for lack of a better word. And yet when the Kim family were asked something as simple as just to provide him with some food, they essentially wouldn't have a bar of it. They were so selfish and self-serving that they wouldn't do anything for anyone else, even if ultimately it was to the detriment of them in the end, because had they just gone along with it, there probably would not have been any issues going forward. But again, this comes back to the nature of a parasite and the fact that it always kills its host. It's a self-fulfilling thing where a parasite inevitably kills itself by its actions. And that's what we saw in this film. But yes, social hierarchy in this was an interesting concept. And there was this great idea that all the peasants in the world sort of reek of the same foul smell. And while they may all see themselves as above each other to some degree and have a pecking order, those that are truly affluent, those at the top like the Park family, see them all as the same scum. they don't see a differentiation between them. There's no distinction. They're just the poor. But further to that, you know, while we've got these two families in similar situations without realizing it, and by this I mean the Kim family and the previous housekeeper and her husband, I did feel it was a little bit cliche to have the father end up in the basement. I did feel like that was just a little bit too predictable, and I don't feel that it helped the narrative be conveyed any better, because by that point it was already well and truly clear why the world was the way it was for these people. What did you think?
I wonder whether the ending was Boone's method of commenting on the resilience of the poor and the effects of what a potential uprising could manifest. I think it shows that everyone has a breaking point, and when societies are pushed to the limit, we see chaos being unleashed. We see Boone portray the pent-up frustration of someone being treated like a rodent, you know, someone inferior, with the use of these close-up frame shots. And Dong Yi is constantly expressing his disgust at the pugnant odor, you know, of the working class and his disdain for this smell. And when this gets too much for Kaite, he resorts to murder. You know, like, how dare another man who has been given these different wonderful opportunities in life look down on him, and someone who has never experienced what he actually goes through on a daily basis, you know, treat him like filth. In regards to the ending, I almost felt it was serendipitous. The permanent trappings of a parasite. You know, it was almost the permanent enclosure of the parasite. It was almost metaphorical. You know, the ending leaves Ki-woo with an unobtainable goal. You know, he'll never make enough money to buy the house and free his father, but the illusion of faith leads him to try. And I think this is the harsh reality for those who lead similar lives, fighting to achieve a notion of freedom that's, you know, essentially an illusion, a dream that's never obtainable. Because I guess, like, the system may be built on their backs, but it will never actually reward them.
Yeah, see, I felt, as I said, you know, the family was selfish, arrogant, and ignorant, even to the plight of those who shared their circumstances. You know, they only sought to better themselves no matter the cost to others, including their equals. You know, I guess to some degree, they're all parasites. But as you say, it did sort of result in the father becoming trapped, essentially, in a jar, and a son striving to free him from circumstances at which he never could.
You've made mention to this previously, Saif, but as the title suggests, the entities feed off, you know, this larger host. But I feel like it's a very soft transition, you know, where the invasion and the power shift occurs more slowly. The Parks are ignorant to their own plight. Mr. Park doesn't even know that the lights on his stairs actually gets turned on by a guy downstairs. He thinks it's, you know, some automated setting. The connection to their children is actually achieved through tutors and field experts, sucking the benefit from those around them so their children can sort of prosper and perpetuate the cycle. The manual labor required to maintain the level of comfort the Parks are used to actually goes unnoticed. And just as a fun fact, in the end credits, the song which is played is called Soju One Glass, which is apparently tells the story of Ki-woo trying to save up all the money for him to buy the house. And the original title of the song was actually called 461 Years, because, and this is a calculation by Boo Jong-hoo as a final step to the capitalistic greed. He basically says this is how long Ki-woo would have to save to afford the house. And it's Boo Jong-hoo's way of saying that the battle of class divides and capitalism will not be resolved in his lifetime or the next.
Yeah, there's most definitely a story sort of element in here that's about the fact that this is a perpetual cyclical nature where people for all eternity will struggle to get out of the dire straits they may have been born into or find themselves in subsequently later in life, but that they may never actually be able to elevate themselves out of that position just because the way the world is, I guess, designed to some extent, as so far as capitalism is concerned, is that you have to have something to grow on with, and that it can't just be, you know, a couple of pennies that you rub together. You still need to have something substantial. And if you don't start off with that, it's very difficult to actually attain it.
Well, I said, I really enjoyed picking this film apart, but with that being said, let's wrap this film up.
Yeah, sure. So in the end, this is a film about a family who, for all intents and purposes, are parasites in and of themselves. Now, this film goes through so many different layers of social class and messages and analogies, as we've just gone through. And those are both shown in the narrative and through the visuals of this film. And it's done in such an eloquent and beautiful way that this film can't help but be anything but respected for the story that which it tells, and tells so beautifully. And so for these reasons, I actually give this film a 7.8 out of 10.
In my opinion, Parasite deserves all the accolades it's received, and this is a film that discusses topics like class inequality, capitalistic greed, and social injustice, and it combines it with a cinematic mastery and a refined narrative that's been synonymous with Bong Joon-ho's previous works. Now, I would consider this film to be an audacious assessment of the fundamental inequity that's intertwined in today's society, as I mentioned before, but with the combination of thriller, horror, structural realism, and satirical comedy, Parasite delivers a phenomenal viewing experience, and that's why I'm going to give it an 8 out of 10. Very similar to you, Save.
Yeah, no, I think we're pretty much bang on point for that. And with that being said, that's all from us once again. And remember, you can let us know what films you'd like us to do too. Just drop us a comment on our socials. But until then, we hope you've enjoyed yet another episode from us. And remember to give us a follow and subscribe on Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube, and recommend us to your friends and family. Until next week, though, goodbye from us.
Follow us, guys, on Mess Explores on Instagram, and we'll see you all soon next week.